We could have just had the whole sermon right there. That was perfect. The theological knowledge of kids out of the mouths of babes. And when Sue and I were talking about what the children's moment would be, I said, well, let's just ask the kids what the topic is. Well, who is God? What is God? And as if you've looked at your programs, that's the topic or the theme for my message series this month is who or what is God? And today, I'm going to talk about who or what is God. She is a unifier. Now, this idea of who or what is God, since some of you know I'm not a theist, that might seem odd that I'm considering such a theme. But if you note in your programs the way I've written the title of this series, I do so with God in quotation marks. And my use of the word is therefore not intended to connote its traditional definition. And I use the word very loosely today, only so that I can express concepts of God and not its literal meaning. And I also use, if you note, the feminine pronoun to refer to God. And that, again, doesn't mean that I believe God is a gender or much less a person. I use the feminine to indicate that I believe if God were a person or human, she would be a she. And I also purposefully want to renounce historic notions of paternalism or male-centered domination connected to God. But what's important? My main point is that I believe people can come together under the concept that God is a force of love and unity, and thereby reject the standard concept of God, which is, I believe, based on fear. Contrary to traditional notions of God, she's not judgmental. We have no reason to fear her. And indeed, my understanding is that she is far more complex than a supernatural being. We can understand her with our minds and be like her in how we act. She is, in essence, a force for good and a part of all nature and science-based reason. And that's the focus, as I said, in my message today. Next week, I'll assert that God is truth. And in 2 weeks, I'll claim she is timeless. For me, these messages are my attempt to promote how concepts of God, as I said, can and should bring people together. Now, some of you may remember a film, I think it was probably about 30 years ago, the film 2001, A Space Odyssey. And it's opening scenes showing very early humans living life thousands of years ago. And this opening scene has these very early humans foraging for berries. And they had to compete with wild boars to pick the berries. And eventually, these hominids in the film discover how to attack and kill and eat the boars. They realized that large leg bones from other animals could be fashioned into weapons. And these weapons then enable these early humans to reduce the competition from the boars for berries and also eat more meat. And it also further enabled them to defend against and attack perceived threats. And the film depicts one early man throw a weaponized bone into the air. And as we watch as it tumbles in a cloud-filled sky. And that image then immediately cuts to one of a spaceship soaring through interstellar space. And we see in two great cinematic moments the evolutionary history of humanity. What's remarkable is that the early human scene in that film highlights what was the time period when fear combined with religion and began to control human thought. Humans had evolved larger brains due to this higher protein diet from meat, and that enabled them to be mentally aware of death and also imagine abstract ideas. A large bone, for instance, was abstractly conjured in ancient minds as something that could be fashioned into a weapon. That higher mental ability to think abstractly and also understand threats, these led to the first religion. And archaeologists have proven that assertion by discovering Neanderthals buried their dead after adorning them with symbolic figurines and beads. And this indicates ritualistic behavior and the existence of early religion. There was a purpose to their actions far beyond the mourning of dead. Neanderthals prepared and ritually empowered their deceased for an afterlife existence. And that suggests they conceived of a higher power or God as a force that made such an afterlife possible. And even more, believing in an afterlife also indicates that they were acutely aware of their own mortality in more than an instinctual way. Animals, as you might know, can sense when they are threatened. But that sense does not suggest, experts say, a deeper awareness that one could possibly cease to exist. Once early humans evolved to become fully aware of death and ceasing to exist, they were frightened. And indeed, death still scares many people. With the understanding of what death means, ancient humans turn to the abstract world to find reassurance. People don't really die, they hoped. They move on to another form of existence, they came to believe. And the ancients could not observe that existence, but the idea of it soothed them. And so they believed and hoped in an afterlife. God and religion were thus created as a result of fear. And I've discussed in here before, and with some of you privately, the beginnings of my own spirituality. I was first drawn many years ago to religion and Christianity because of its promise for personal redemption. And at that time, many years ago, I hated the fact that I had gay attractions. I was ashamed of my supposedly sinful nature. And I was afraid of the supernatural concept of God judging me and sending me to hell. And I began attending church and later got so involved that I attended seminary and became a minister. There's a church sign I saw recently that says, quote, "God answers knee mail," K-N-E-E. And I remember being on my knees a lot many years ago, praying that God would make me, quote unquote, normal. But it eventually dawned on me that God could not change me because my concept of God at the time does not exist. And what I also realized was it was my fears about how I would be judged that had led me to religion. And later I understood or came to understand and believe that most religious impulses are based on anxieties similar to mine. Fears of death or of eternal judgment or hell or simply nothingness. Fears motivate many religious ideas about God, that one must win a supernatural being's favor in order to enjoy a happy and eternal afterlife. Sadly, I believe religions often foster even more fear. Religions fear those who do not think or believe like them. They can too often stereotype and condemn and oppress people for their differences. Such fear initiated the ancient Jewish conquest of pagans, Roman attacks on Christians, Christians fighting Muslims during the Crusades, and today's discriminations against Jews and Muslims. The world is divided based largely on fear and how God is defined. And what was true for early humans and for modern religions today is that fear is not conducive to unity. It's exclusive and judgmental. Fear is the opposite of love and unity, which, as I say, ought to define our understanding of God. Now, Baruch Spinoza, of whom I often refer, was the philosophical father of this kind of unifying God awareness. He wrote in a 1677 book entitled Ethics, and he was the first to articulate the idea that God and science work together. God exists in all of nature, he wrote, and in all the forces that control it. For Spinoza, God and nature are almost interchangeable. They're essentially united. And what we see all around us, we can look out the windows on this beautiful day, look outside, wherever in nature. But Spinoza believed that what we see in our bodies and oceans and plants and animals and the cosmos are things of beauty. And they're beautiful in their complexity and the ways that they work and came to exist. We see in nature, therefore, the invisible hand of God-like creative forces. But we know that thanks to reason-based science, that those forces are physical laws, such as thermodynamics or entropy or evolution or mathematics or biology. Such observable and provable principles are not supernatural. There's no magic in them. There is instead a logical cause and effect to them. Importantly, these forces and natural laws are not fearful things. Death is a part of nature, and all things eventually decay, as we know, and become something else. That's not something to dread. I'm made up of the stuff of stardust, and will one day return to that, and so will you. That's an amazing and wonderful truth. And accepting this leads us to reassurance and celebration and love for all creation. And it also unites us. And as I said earlier, fear is the opposite of love. Fear pits one person or one group against another. Love, on the other hand, refuses to have that mindset. And Spinoza's thoughts about nature were that it is good and a creative thing. It's not selfish or vengeful or wanting to exclude or condemn for petty flaws. Spinoza's concept of God, therefore, is that she is expansive and generous and quite simply a part of everything. Such a God concept understands the processes of nature and celebrates them. Seeing God and nature as interchangeable allows people to then embrace charity and gentleness and humility and peace. Science-based forces that thus share what most religions describe as a God attribute. God is truth. And truth can never be divisive or scary or hateful. And that idea was the foundation of Unitarianism. Ralph Waldo Emerson, 18th century writer from whom Unitarianism derives many of its ideas, said this, quote, "Within man is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one," end quote. Native Americans believe that God is the Great Spirit, or simply, the One. They also believe in a circle of life type of God. As many of us know, that what we are today will be something quite different in the future. The molecules that course through our bodies at this very moment are the same as those found in all of nature. Everything is related. Everything is one. Hindu sacred writings, the Upanishads, offer similar concepts. They write that Brahman, or God, is without parts or attributes. Brahman is one without a second, they write. For Hindus, Brahman is the whole of reality. And Brahman is definitely not an anthropomorphic, personal being. And many Jews likewise see a natural unity, the concept of God. Hasidic and Kabbalah Jews refer to God as Ein Sof, the One, a force that is immanent and a part of everything. And there's a new theology in Christianity called open theology that explores this thinking as well. God, according to open theology, is integrated into creation. God is the sum of all truth. God is not apart from sciences like evolution and astrophysics, this new form of Christian theology says. And Sufi Islam is the mystical version of Islam, and it's also a reconciliation between fundamentalism and the reality of science. God, for Sufism, is a force that energizes and defines the universe. God is not a being, but a unifying idea. And finally, Buddhism perhaps best expresses the concept of God. Even though Buddhism has no equivalent word for God, some say it's the idea of Buddhist nirvana. To reach nirvana, a perfect state of being, people must seek awareness of all that is real. In that sense, reason and logic work in tandem with attitudes of peace and kindness. And when these are realized, something which only a few people are able to obtain, one reaches a state of nirvana, or what could be called God. And many Buddhists simply refer to this as discovering all and becoming one. Now, what I found after my own personal disillusionment with religion was a kind of spiritual atheism. God is not a theistic being, but she is nevertheless real in the sense that I see an interconnection between all people. And indeed, all nature. That's a well-used phrase that Unitarian Universalists often use, but one that accurately describes the oneness that we can believe. And that is, there are many paths, but one truth. And this means that we believe that people do not each seek a God concept in the same way, but people seek the same thing. For our beliefs as you use, we therefore affirm the wisdom of science and the primacy of golden rule morality. God is the totality of reason and the completion of love and service to others. Now, moving away from an abstract concept of God into one that is rooted in the natural world, we will find the peace that we all seek. This is a God concept that is part of our minds and brings us together instead of dividing us with fear. Whether we call God Ein Sof or Brahman or Great Spirit or All in One or Nirvana, God is a unifier. For me, God is everything that informs our minds and our hearts with reason and goodness. And with that, I wish you all much peace and joy.